Welcome to the Starting SaaS Podcast. My name is Micaela Richmond, and this podcast is all about creating a foundation for SaaS. Welcome to the Starting SaaS Podcast. Today, I have on Julie Rader. So this is going to be so much fun. She is a customer success coach at Dooley AI, and Dooley helps people. They help salespeople focus on selling so that they can hit quota better. She used to be a college athlete, and she had an interesting start into SaaS, which we're going to get into shortly. But I'm very, very excited to talk all things customer success. Welcome onto the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's going to be great.
Very excited. So how did you get into SaaS first? I know that you were, so you went college athlete, then you went into education. What was that like, and why did you decide to transition out of education, and how did you find SaaS?
Super, super good question. So yeah, education was great for me. I was a special education teacher for 6 years. And I just like was looking ahead long term, and it wasn't something that I was going to stay in. I knew I just needed to like pivot. And yeah, just like leadership positions weren't anything that I wanted to go into, and like there was no other avenues in education. So I just wanted to pivot. And yeah, like working with kids and getting that different perspective on the world was like definitely something that I'm really grateful for. But super glad that I also pivoted and like essentially bet on myself, because I left my job with not really much of a plan. But kind of just like hopped on LinkedIn, to be honest, and found out what SaaS was. I think I saw something on LinkedIn too, where this other person transitioned. They're like, I Googled SaaS. Like literally that was me too. I didn't really know what it meant at first, but just started networking, connecting with people and figuring it out. So yeah, then I got my job at Dooley. That's a longer story though. I don't know how much we want to dive in there yet.
I would totally love to dive in there. But so first, yeah, I was in the same boat. I had no idea what SaaS was in the beginning. I was like, how to SaaS? Like, how does it work? What is SaaS? And yeah, it's an interesting thing, because I didn't realize how complex SaaS was. So whenever I started the podcast, I wanted to understand what the roles were and how they worked together. And same. I think that that's the hardest part to understand, is not just one role, because customer success, okay, like that is one role, but understanding how customer success works to help a business get to where they need to get and to create success, that's the hard part.
Totally. And so my first interview was like, I looked at the job application as a customer success specialist role for an ed tech company. And I was like, oh, that looks like something that I could do. And so then I applied, but like, I didn't really know much about the job, right? So I couldn't speak to how I could be like value to them, but I got really far. So then I just started diving into customer success, like getting on webinars, talking to people in the industry, going to like listening to podcasts, joining groups, office hours, things like that. And just asking a bunch of questions, because yeah, I think when I started really finally understanding more about what the role was, I know I was never going to be like an expert to a T, because I didn't do it, right? But I needed to be able to speak to like the skills that I previously had in education and how they were going to transition into the CS world. So when I had these conversations with people on the internet, networking through LinkedIn, like that is really where I started like gaining traction and having momentum towards like getting a job.
I definitely want to dive into that in a minute. How do you explain customer success to people that don't know what it is?
Yeah. And I think, you know, customer success looks different in like any business too. Like it depends, you know, startup versus like, you know, a well-developed company. But yeah, it's interesting, because I try to explain to my family, right? But like, I guess like the easy answer is like, you know, you're helping someone achieve success. So like whatever problems that they have with their business, like our product is bringing value to them to help them achieve those goals. But also like, in more specifically at Dooley, like I'm helping them on board with the product too, and helping them set up and kicking them off as well. So, and you have to be able to build a relationship as well and then continue that on. But every single conversation should be thinking about like, what value am I bringing to this conversation? You know, you shouldn't be just meeting to meet. And just continually guiding them towards their goals that they want to achieve.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned bringing value to people, and I think that's very, very important. Customer success in B2B specifically, your customer is another business, and often it's people inside of the business. Who are the people that you're usually meeting with, helping? Who are your usual customers?
Yeah, so I'm meeting with a lot of sales leaders, and then also like I'm training a lot of AEs, account executives. So it's really cool to meet with those types of people since, you know, it's like our world, like we're, you know, it's like the world that I'm in. So yeah, those are the people that I'm mainly connecting with currently.
How do you do that well? How do you start to develop a relationship with somebody from another business well?
That's a good question. I don't know, like specifically when I start meeting with people, and I first meet them, like I try to do some research on them, right? Like to figure out how I can connect with them. Like specifically one customer that we were meeting with, like knew that they had an athletic background. So just like something to start the conversation where we can connect, right? And they feel comfortable and kind of like set the stage. And then, honestly though, how you bring value and like consistently have that conversation is, or continuously bring value and have that relationship continue to develop is by literally listening to what they need and what they're wanting in conversations and ask the right questions. And then, continue to figure out what they need and then provide those solutions and resources as you go along the journey.
That makes sense. Whenever you got into Dooley and whenever you got into customer success, you're meeting with a lot of salespeople and leaders. What was it like to, I don't know, be new to the SaaS space and have to teach people about your product, teach people about a SaaS tool? Like how did you take that? And what like advice would you give to other people that are trying to fill in the gaps for themselves?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me that was hard at first is, especially since I'm coming from a new industry, like the lingo. And that was like before I even met with customers, right? But like the lingo of SaaS was you know, a little bit for me to like learn. And then also, I think this is just normal for lots of people, like the initial like first calls are just like, you have nerves because you've not had a lot of calls, right? Like you learn from experience. So like, for me, I'm a little bit of a perfectionist in that sense. Like, you know, I want to be good right away. So I was like, it was a little bit hard for me to not know all the questions, not know all the answers. But I think it's okay because you're never going to know the answers. So you literally just say, you know, I don't know that answer right now. Like, I will get back to you in a timely manner. And like, whatever expectations you set on when you're going to get back to them, like, make sure you hit those expectations. But I think like product knowledge is super huge. Like you got to know the product as best as you can. Mm. And I think just like continuously like reflecting and like you got to do things in order to get better. So you're not going to be perfect like right away. It's just what it is.
What are some great tips for like, I guess, deepening your knowledge of your product? Do you usually, if I were doing this, would a good tactic be to like almost simulate the customer journey, like actually go through it and really, really understand? Or what are some things that you would say would be really good for people who want to deepen their product knowledge, deepen their knowledge of their own company?
So like deep dive the help center, like all the articles and everything. If you have like a channel that, you know, their product updates, like make sure you stay up to date on that. Like play around in the product, right? Like get familiar with how to navigate and use it. Ask questions for sure. Like don't be afraid to not ask questions. Shadow a ton of calls, like when you're starting out and onboarding. And then like I was also doing like a little bit of like support. So that helped because I was getting a bunch of customer questions. And then like that helped me learn more about the product too.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. It's always interesting to hear how people have taken the things that they've learned in other sides of an industry or in like, whenever I was talking to somebody about like being an MDR or being an SDR, they always say that it helped them so much to do the next step. What are some of the things that were like that for you, both in education and then also in the very beginning of your customer success journey?
So like, I'll start with education. So you got to understand, like in teaching, I had to understand my kids, like, and really understand like what they're motivated by and like what their interests are. And like, I think that correlates to the persona that I'm working with a lot, right? I got to understand what sales leaders care about. I got to understand what account executives care about, VP of sales, like all those different personas. I think that's really important to understand those. What else? And then, yeah. And that just goes along with like relationship building, right? I'm also training people on the product. Like I'm running training sessions. It's literally teaching. And I'm breaking down information to people who have never been using the product, right? So I have to use simpler language. I have to expand on terms that are maybe common for the Dooley company, but they don't know. So, finding ways to explain language in a more simple way and using examples and being able to show as much as I can. And then just like asking the leaders to like, how are the account executives learn best? Like, you know, they probably have a general idea of like, how their team functions and like what they care about. And so, yeah, I try to incorporate some of that stuff, in as well. So definitely training is like, obviously a lot like teaching. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I refine that session like as I go on, because I'm just like learning and getting better. And obviously every team session is different. And I'm tailoring it to each different customer. So it's really similar to like writing a lesson plan, because like I was definitely tailoring all my lesson plans to specific kids. So, what else? The other thing is like customer success is like in the middle of a lot of things. Like we're working with marketing, we're working with sales, we're working with product, we're working with engineering, and we are in front of the customer. So we need to be a good communicators and talk to so many people. And, as a special education teacher, like I was in the middle of a lot of other, departments and people as well, because like I was the driver of the kids' plan. And so like I was working with general ed teachers, I was working with the principals really closely, the parents. So, other like specialists, occupational therapists, physical therapists, speech pathologists. So it's really similar that way too. Like you have to be a good communicator. You have to make sure everyone's on the same page and up to date on things. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, that's very important. And you said a couple of things. So CS is in the middle of things, you said, and that it touches into all of the other aspects of an industry. Who are the people that you're communicating, and how have you learned to communicate with them best? Like, did you have to learn what they cared about specifically? Like, how do you tailor your communication to them?
It's a really good question. So like we are definitely working with sales, because sometimes we get pulled in early on like deals or whatever. It also like working with sales is really important, because like they're before the journey of success. So like, I really got to understand what's going on. So it's always great to like ask them questions too and understand the sales cycle. But then like we're getting feedback from customers all the time. Like, oh, this would really be really great if we could have this in the product. You know, just like feedback that we're hearing. What we're seeing is like common themes across customers. Like it's important that we communicate that information to like product and engineering. So, and then like, you know, so that's one of the bigger things that's been, a big transition, I would say, from teaching, is like all communication. Like I'm a virtual, right? Like I'm in a remote job now. So like communicating over, like a communication platform like Slack is definitely new to me. And like, you have to be very explicit on how you say things. Make it clear to understand, short and concise, like definitely have like learned and like gotten better at that. So I think that's just very important. And like, I think making sure you're clear on what you're communicating is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because like that goes straight back to the very beginning of you trying to apply for jobs. Like everything's just about, okay, what is the value? What do people care about? And how do I provide that exact thing? And that was something that I had to learn as well. Just, okay, what do these people care about? What do they need to know? And how do I communicate that simply? Because that's what people want. Like, they don't need to know everything that you know. They just need to know what's going to help them do their job better. And sometimes that's hard. It's like writing. I know that you love writing. The hardest part in writing is taking stuff out, like knowing what to take out and knowing how to make something more concise.
Totally. And like, it's everything though, right? It's like communicating customers. It should be concise, like communicating to the teams on Slack. Like just communication everywhere. It's so important. And like, there's so much writing involved. It just kind of like hit me, like everything involves writing, right? Like I'm follow-up emails, you're communicating on Slack. You know, you may be writing LinkedIn messages, like everything involves writing.
So be a good writer.
Yeah. For sure.
How do you decide what's important? So like if you're writing, say, an email sequence, or if you're trying to give a training, is it like trial and error and eventually you refine it? Or are there things that you do specifically to make your writing better and your communication better and more precise?
Yeah, for sure. I think you're like constantly refining it, right? But I think formatting is really important. Obviously that's not talking about the content, but like when I'm sending a follow-up email to a customer, like I'm trying to send like, okay, like next steps, this is what we said. Like I'm trying to reiterate what I said on the call. And then, if I gave them action items, let's say, like I want they may not remember. So I'm going to put that in the email, but I'm just going to like bullet, like, okay, action items, like, here's what we said, next steps. Here's what we said. This is what we discussed on the call. And I'm trying to like, just do very simple communication with like bullet points if I can. And, not a lot of words, like, right. Cause like people are getting flooded with emails. They do not want to read a lot. So I really try to be concise and like make it easy to look at and like digest the information.
How do you
like salespeople specifically are probably getting a ton of emails.
Yeah.
So
with all of their prospecting, all of the contacts that they're keeping up with. Definitely. Totally. I had a question. What was it? How do you like continue to foster customer satisfaction? How do you make sure that the touch point that you are, because like, okay, so in every organization, every single touch point matters. Any person that touches outside needs to reflect something good about the company, but customer success specifically, how do you make sure that you handle things with, I guess, decorum?
It's a good question. I think I'm still learning about that. I think when you really are doing what the customer wants and like what's going to help the business, like they are eventually like seeing you as an advisor. So like, that's the goal. And I think that takes like, I think that's like, you know, it's something that is something you develop over time, right? Like, I mean, there's a lot that's involved in customer success. I don't think anyone out of the gate is going to be an expert, right? There's just so much to learn. We have to be, I just actually saw like, there was like this meme or whatever, like we have to be product experts. We have to be, awesome with the customer, developing like trainings. Like we're just like, we wear a lot of hats, and it's obviously not going to be something you're an expert in every area to start. And I think it takes a while to figure out how all those pieces put together. But yeah, I think eventually like it's tricky too. It's this balance of like, you know, you want to reach out to customers and want to make sure that like they're doing well and everything, but also like there can be too much of that too, right? Like you can be causing friction that way, and you can also be causing friction or be causing like if you're not doing enough too. So it's like that that back and forth balance. And that's just kind of like you have to be able to figure that out.
Yeah, that seems hard. Another thing that I think it's very hard is like drawing the line for or between, yes, I'm going to help you and go above and beyond, and no, like there are such things as bad customers. So where do you, have you drawn a specific line, or like, how do you decide, okay, this is an ask that I am going to go above and beyond for, and this is an ask that I'm just not going to go above and beyond for?
Yeah, I think that all depends on like what your product is designed for in terms of like your ICP. And then also, like there could be a specific product request, right? But like, if it's not going to benefit like a ton of customers, then, we're probably not going to be able to make the ask or make the change. Right. But I think in terms of like, we help our customers build out workflows, right? Well, like I gotta be, direct and like, this is the way we should do it. Right. Cause like, I know best, I'm the expert. And obviously you like do that with class and like respect and like guide them in the way, but we're like guiding them, right? We're just not the people that say yes to everything they know they or they want, you know? So it's like that you listen, but you also provide, guidance in a respectful way in terms of like things that they're wanting or things. Cause if you're saying yes to something that you know is not going to be beneficial for them or work out, you're not going to set them up for success. They're going to be like unhappy anyway in the end, you know?
Mm-hmm. So most of them are pretty good and like they react well because you're trying to help them. Like they know that you're using their product, you're bringing it in, you're trying to help them. You're the advisor. Are there any specific cases that you can remember where like you did not hit the advisor, like, I guess, status with them where it was really, really hard for you to become that person that had a voice and that could direct them?
I haven't had like a lot of super unhappy customers yet. So
that's awesome.
I've only been managing accounts for like a little while. Right. So, still navigating those waters, but I think like how you deal with someone who's, and this is another parallel to teaching. So like, obviously like I worked with parents who weren't always happy sometimes. Right. But you listen and you reply, and sometimes you're just a listening ear because maybe they were just upset in the moment because they were just like emotional, whatever. And they didn't actually have a clear like head into what they were saying. So, but honestly, like if you don't have an answer at the time, you'll say, okay, I follow up and I'll figure out the best, path here to move forward. But, yeah, I think that's honestly the best way to handle it. Like you listen to what they need, listen to what they want, figure out if you can find a solution. And if you can't find it right away or have an answer immediately, like tell them a time that you're going to follow up and what you're going to come up with.
I love that. I think it's interesting that, the way that you're explaining customer success, it's kind of like a helper, like the hat that you put on is the helping hat. And so it's a little bit different than something like sales where you're trying to sell something. And if somebody doesn't want it, then it can feel like a personal blow. But
right.
On the other side, like customer success, you're actually trying to help them. Like there's, it's not personal. Nothing that they say against you is personal. Usually it's just, hey, I want to help you. Okay. You don't want it right now. It's okay. Like that is so interesting to me how it relates so deeply with teaching. Like that is exactly what you do. You're very, very patient. You want to help. You want to, like, there is a common shared end, which is really cool.
Right. And so they bought because they have a specific problem they're trying to solve for.
Mm-hmm.
So then we are the, you know, like the in-between of that product to like try to get them to solve their solution using this tool, but also with our guidance and help.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that like, so in the beginning you were talking about value and how you understood that if you were going to get into SaaS, if you were going to get the roles that you wanted, you had to be able to speak the lingo, but also translate like what you had done into Dooley and B2B SaaS language. Do you think that, like, it seems as though that has been a like very, very consistent theme throughout everything, just the value creation, the recognizing what people want, the translating into some specific language. Like you do have to learn another company's language. What has that been like?
I think more for, well, that like obviously do research on the company and like what the business actually does. But then I think too, like I'm going to be speaking to an AE and I'm going to be speaking to a leader, right? So like if a new user signs up and it's like a sales manager, and then a new user signs up and it's like an AE, like I'm going to have two different calls there, right? Cause like the sales manager is going to care about something a lot different than an AE is. So I have to tailor my, like, my specific, like, training session or workflow call on those differently. So mm-hmm. that's more of, like, what I think, like, you're bringing, like, 'cause if I just did, like, a standard way just for, like, what I say, I have something for the AE and then I just do the same thing for the sales manager. Like, they don't care about, like, what they care about what the AE does day to day, but they want to know how the tool is going to be useful for their role. So you mm-hmm. have to understand the different, like, personas that you're working with. And I think that's really, like, what goes on in teaching too. Like, I had to understand different disabilities and what they, how they would react and things, and, like, how they, what their interests were, and like, what goals I was working on with them. So it definitely has, like, parallels there.
Do you think that creating an ICP, or do you refine your ICP? Like, you create it and it's a conceptual thing, like, in the beginning, most of the time. And it's, like, this thing where you're like, okay, this is my ICP. This is who I'm working with. These are the things that they care about. And then you get into the conversation and, like, nobody is as, you know, cut and dry as an ICP. How do you take your ICP and then, I guess, form what you already know around that specific person, their specific wants and desires? Is it, like, taking the information that the AE has already given you through the sales process and doing that beforehand? Or is there an aspect of the call where you're kind of, like, navigating and really coming to understand who this person is and what they want and how you can help them to get what they want?
Yeah, I think it's understanding, like, what conversations had before. So, like, you don't want to like go through things that they've already discussed, right? Like, that seamless transition from, like, the AE to CS is so important. So, like, yeah, any information I'm getting from there, like, really make sure I understand what was already said and talked about. But then I think, like, it's so important to be, like, present on every call, not making assumptions, like, listening and then asking the right follow-up questions is so key. Like, when I first was, like, starting, I was like, oh, you know, sales does so much discovery, but, like, a CS person does a ton of discovery too. Mm-hmm. And so it's, like, that's something that I just, like, continually want to get better at. Like, you know, you're listening to what they're saying and then you, like, follow up with a really good question, because you really want to, like, there's always something you can unpack and uncover and learn more about the customer.
Mm-hmm. That's actually very interesting. What's interesting to me in having all of these SaaS conversations is recognizing how much of the skills overlap. Like, yes, you can be a good salesperson and, you know, have a certain set of skills that are very unique to sales, but there are so many skills that overlap with marketing, CS, product, like, totally. Just because it's the industry, I guess.
Yeah. I like CS and AE for sure. Like, you see a lot of people, like, I think, you know, they may start out in sales and then want to go to CS, or, like, CS can go to sales. And so, yeah, those are pretty interchanged, not, like, completely interchangeable, but, like, there's definitely connections there. Yeah, I think it's really interesting too. That is one thing I really wanted to understand too. And I think it helped me get into, a business and actually get experience, but, like, how marketing works with sales, with customer success and product and all that stuff. And obviously that's still, like, a learning curve, but, it definitely helps. Like, I'm a big picture thinker. I want to understand how everything works together. Like, that's how it was for me in, like, teaching too. Like, I needed mm-hmm. to understand all that. Same thing in sports. Like, I needed to understand how we were all going to function together on the court. It's, like, similar things. So
I would agree. That's how I work as well. Just, like, the macro first and then the micro. And I'll get really, really deep. But as soon as I understand, like, why it matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, like, you know, if things start going wrong, like, you really have to understand where everything is connecting, because you can't really get to the root of the problem if you don't understand all of those moving pieces.
That's a good point. Just, like, okay, well, at what point is this going wrong? Okay. Who is here? Why do I think this is going wrong? What are all of the different points that are under this that could potentially be causing the problem? In your search of, like, understanding this macro picture, can you paint, like, just a short summary of how things work together
in terms of, like, sales and everything?
Sure. Sales, but also just SaaS in general. Like, I know it's not, I know it's not really short because it's a lot of components, but in, because I don't want to, you know, take too much of your time and too much of your mental energy on this one topic. But like macro SaaS is so interesting and how the players work together and how sales, you know, utilizes marketing and at what point they switch. But I guess summary version, how do you look at it now?
I honestly don't know if I'm like, can articulate this the best way because I'm new to the world, but, you know, marketing is generating the leads. They work really closely with sales, a good marketing and sales team. And then, you know, sales gets the leads and then they're working the sales cycle, right? And when they close the deal, it moves to CS. Product is always working on like getting customer feedback and figuring out where the product's developing. And then, you know, engineering comes in there as well, like developing the product. Obviously product and engineering are something that I need to like know and understand better. And then I even say like marketing too, like I can definitely learn more about marketing and sales. Like I need to learn about all of that even deeper, but, that is like the high overview that I have currently.
That was perfect. I was, whenever I asked the question, I was like, you know what, this would be great on a whiteboard.
Yeah, that would, no, like a visual map would be great. But, yeah, like specifically at Duly though, like the product team is really good at like having a good relationship with our team and like hearing feedback and wanting to know like what's working and what's not and like how they can drive the product and you know, create that roadmap. So
What does a good product customer success relationship look like?
Like we're communicating to them customer feedback. They're also, you know, willing to hear it. They're coming to us and asking for our input when they're building things out. Like, I think it's just like this, smooth, like relationship and connection.
Mm-hmm. And there are, I was actually really surprised whenever I realized that that's not always the case. Like sometimes you have product and customer success that don't get along just because product has some ideas about what the product should be. And the customer success is like, hey, no, this is what our customers are telling us. And like the mismatch does occur. What do you like? I don't know if you've seen that in any other company, but have you ever heard of that happening? And if so, what are the problems that usually occur that create that?
I can't really speak to that much because I only have Duly experience. But we have like a really good relationship at Duly with the product team. So I think that I don't have anything to go off of based on like what's, you know,
beyond that.
So I can't really like speak to it, but, I feel like we have a really good working relationship with the product team, which I think only helps drive the company and move it along. Right. So,
Yeah. No, that's special. That's really special. Like having that seamless flow between different teams and making sure that everybody's aligned to help the company. It's a good culture.
Totally. Yeah. And like we're in front of the customers, right? So like We need to be gathering that feedback. We need to be communicating it clearly. And then, you know, they also need to be like respecting that we're the ones getting the feedback, right? So they got to hear what we have to say. Product team. So.
Yeah. No, definitely. What was the hardest thing for you to learn whenever you were coming into customer success? Other than the lingo.
Yeah, that was definitely one thing. You know, you learn things on the as you're interviewing and you're researching everything, but every company has their own lingo too. And like, just learning, like, you know, just learning, I think learning the product too, like, and diving deep into it, like Duly isn't like a sophisticated product, but I just think that it was like a lot more tech, you know, than I had to deal with before. Cause you have to explain it, right? Like you have, in order to really teach well, you have to be able to really understand it well. And like, cause if you have a complex thing, you got to be able to break it down. You got to understand it well. You got to understand it well. So, I think that takes time, right?
Mm-hmm.
What else? I think just like how everything works together, like you were saying too, like, and definitely like the whole sales cycle and process and how that all works as well is something that that's like important to learn and something mm-hmm. that I can continue to learn about too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would agree with this. The lingo was difficult, especially it's always funny to hear like an acronym or something that has a different acronym in a different industry. And then you'll say it and somebody from a different industry will be like, you mean this? And I'm like, no, not that. It is funny.
There's so much lingo and like acronyms yeah. and teaching. And I just like, didn't think that was in the business world.
That's funny. So, okay, learning deeply enough to explain, that's very, very difficult, especially whenever it comes to, you know, problem solving, problem shooting. Is that a word? Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why that it's like whenever you say, I don't know, like a color too many times and you're like, wait, that sounds weird now.
Or like you can't spell the word the because it's just like weird that day. Like have you ever had that with like a really like simple word and you're like, I don't know how to spell this right now. Like this looks so weird when I'm spelling yeah. it out.
Oh yeah. Oh,
not
yeah.
the, but like another word, but it's
there.
Yeah,
there it's does it to me. The eyes and knees okay. piece maybe. Like those can get me on an interesting day.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, like learning is difficult. Learning a product is difficult. Learning a company is difficult. What did you do to help yourself learn it deeply? You said that you went into the help articles. Were you kind of like, do you understand how you learn? And were you tweaking how you were learning about your company and your product to your own learning style?
Yeah, I think like for me, in the beginning, like people were telling me things about the product, but like, I don't understand unless like, I understand how it's like connecting to things, you know what I'm saying? So I feel like I got a lot of info in the beginning and then it was kind of like, I don't get how this works together. Like, I don't get mm-hmm. how this applies yet. So mm-hmm. it was kind of like, oh, but then I think like, I just really needed to start getting on calls because it like helped me understand like what this all meant. And I think too, like just refining my trainings, like you just like learn how people work, you know, and like how mm-hmm. they're learning the info and you just switch it up as you go along.
Mm, I love that. I actually also like the fact that you came into customer success from an entirely different industry because I imagine that that actually helps you to do your job better because like you understand the things that are potentially difficult for people to understand very easily.
Totally. I was actually did like a office hours with our team about like how teaching can be like applied to this role. Yeah, it's really interesting. Like I think teaching in the internet is very like, you know, on the computer is very tricky because I can't like gauge the audience well. You know, okay, when I was teaching in school, like you're in the room, you can gauge like where, if they're with you or not with you. Mm-hmm. It's harder to see everyone on Zoom at once. So that's tricky. You're also competing with so many distractions, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are all factors that are extremely hard, but I think, yeah, you just learn as you go, simple, really break things down. Really like pause and ask for questions and like go slow and let people, I don't just ask questions. I don't know. You just like, you figure out as you go, like what works and what's not working and like everyone's different. So, mm-hmm. but I think too, like just calling people out and asking them like how they think this is going to help and work and what are they thinking?
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. It's embracing the beginner mindset. Like you can't, there. I don't think I agree with fake it till you make it entirely. Like, I think there's an element of it, but whenever you're beginning, whenever you don't understand, like people that really, really get it, they can see right through it. And that's something that I had to learn firsthand. Just like, okay, instead of pretending like I know, let me just embrace that I don't know and ask all the questions because people want to talk and that definitely helps.
I think it's just, this just makes me think of a teacher I used to work with. And I think this applies here. Like, she was saying how like the best teachers are the ones that teach a lesson, are able to like realize what didn't go well or what needs to happen next time. And then like they keep getting better. And I think that's like a really a similar thing here, right? Like you're never like, for example, a teacher, I'm like never going to teach the lesson like perfectly or how it's going to go in my head, right? Like that never happens. There's always something that goes on, like a student this, a student that. But then like it's the same thing here. Like you can have the training go, and this is just one part of the mm-hmm. journey, right? But like training and teaching is the really similar part. But like you can have this training all set up like how you want it to go and everything, and like you just, it's never going to go how it's planned. It's just life, right? But how you can like, what you can take from it, change for next time, how you can improve. Like, I think that just makes like, you just, that just shows like you're a good, a part of customer success there, but that you're a good coach, a good customer success manager.
I love that. What's the difference between a customer success coach and a customer success manager?
Yeah. So we just have two different titles here at Dooley. Like it's, someone who's like managing smaller accounts versus like someone who's managing like bigger accounts. So there's a lot of different titles in customer success. Like, you know, there's enterprise, there's manager of customer success where you're a leader. There's, like customer success associate. I'm not exactly sure what that all is, but that's more of like a, you know, beginner title, customer success specialist. Like there's just lots of lingo. I didn't even know that at first, when I was applying and things. So yeah, there was just so much language when I first started, like that you gotta research.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the whole, like, it's kind of like a feedback loop, right? Where you know, do a teaching, you have a class or teach something, and then you like literally have to reflect on what you did right, you did wrong. Are there those things built in? So like in sales, you have, you know, your calls recorded most of the time, or you can look back on things, and there is a built-in feedback loop for getting better. Is that how it is in customer success, or do you have to be intentional about that?
I think you have to be more intentional about it. I think it's like something that's just like innate in me in terms of like reflecting. But I like have definitely sent some like recordings to my manager, and like she watches them and gives me feedback. Like, there was a big thing that I was looking for, feedback. Like I like feedback. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm not improving. Like, I don't like that. And it's really like, I think it's really helpful and beneficial for you to watch your own calls too. It's hard definitely to fit it in the day, like, 'cause you got a lot to do, but watching your calls back, like it's literally watching like film again, like that I did in sports. So it's really good to, you don't realize like it's like you just watch yourself and you can figure out like, oh, I could have said this here. I could have done this. Like it would have been better to approach it this way. You mm-hmm. know? Yeah. I just think, and it's just like, I was talking about discovery too. Like you can always just like, you can always ask like one more question and get a little deeper.
Mm-hmm. How do you
really got to be listening for that? And like, mm-hmm. you know, it's to be an active listener on the call. It's like, that's a skill too.
Mm-hmm. So whenever you're trying to create this, feedback loop, like, are you asking yourself specific questions? How are you implementing that? How are you like taking the things that you, notice? So say that you notice that you could have said something better here, or that you shouldn't have paused, or that, you know, maybe you should add another slide or something. How do you implement that? Is it direct? Is it like passive and subconscious, just like after a lot of tries?
That's a good question. You know, that's something maybe I could even implement, like, you know, three questions after the call, like what could have gone better, this, like, and then just like, you know, quick reflection and done. 'Cause like, you know, you could reflect forever and like lose your mind. But, but I like specifically another call that I previously had, like, you know, there's just one part of the call that I felt like I could have done better or dove deeper in. And I have like a call like soon with that same customer. Like I just wrote that in my next notes for that meeting. And I'm like, okay, I want to touch on this. Like I could ask this follow-up question. I think I even asked like someone else on our team or our manager about it in terms of like what I could have maybe have asked deeper. And then I think I even created myself like a little playbook in terms of like what I could say, better in terms of like the conversations that come up that are reoccurring like that.
Mm. It's really difficult to implement things like so difficult. Whenever I was talking to Jake, he mentioned that sometimes he'll ask questions, just like he'll ask four questions in a row or more just to see how long he can continue it. And that has helped him in a sales process, but like consciously doing something, it going into a call and saying, I'm not going to say, as many times, just like making things top of mind and conscious is so, so difficult.
Oh, totally. So like if we're talking about specific language like that, like I was started out at Duly, like running the webinar and they were like training me on it. And one of the girls was giving me feedback and was like, don't say just, and don't say these words. And it was like, I didn't even realize like I was saying those words, but like those certain words just like can give like a not confident or like not sure connotation. So it's like, it's very interesting. Like language is just so, so important. Like how you convey things, what words you say. Just, it's really interesting. And that was some feedback that I got that I was like, oh, it's really hard to like be conscious of like the words you're saying, but then also be like fluent in what you're saying and keep the conversation going to make sure you hit all the points. Cause like, you're not really like, I'm not really like thinking about each word I'm saying right now. Right. Like, but then in order to really listen into like what words that I want to pull out, it's like, yeah, it's really tricky.
Yeah.
I've learned a lot about speaking like on video and like in front of people with this new job as well.
Just because you're doing it so often?
Well, I've never done like a webinar, so I had to do that. And that's different because you're kind of like talking to yourself. Like nobody's like talking back, but they are like interacting on a chat, right? But then also been doing like videos and things too to send to customers. It's like, there's just a lot about, again, writing is speaking, like you're writing like a script almost, right? Like you're speaking. Was doing some content things in the beginning too, where I had to do like videos for like the help articles and things. So like you're writing a script out, but then you're doing the video. And so, yeah, it's just really interesting.
Was it hard to go from education and writing, because writing in education is very formal, to writing now? Business writing is semi-formal, but it depends on the business, and B2B is much less formal than any other business type. Was it ever difficult to go from one to the other?
Well, I definitely think of like specifically email a lot differently now, because like email was more like an educator was just like, okay, I'm going to send this out, like not thinking about like, how am I engaging the person or like what pain points I need to highlight or whatever. And like, that kind of gets more salesy, but, it was just really interesting. I saw this like post on LinkedIn that was like, you know, the header, they're going to see the subject line, and then they're going to see that first line when it like pops in. So it's like, if you're just saying like, hope you had a great weekend, like they're just like, delete, you know, cause they have like all these emails they're getting. It's like, just, it's really interesting to think about. And then, I definitely think of email in a different way. I also think, and I can definitely be like, have my personality in the email. Like that's like kind of what Duly allows to be. So, you know, I add my flair in there, but I definitely used to think email was very formal. Like you said, like, in education, I felt like it was a lot more formal for sure.
And you like writing. So how have you gotten better at writing in general? And obviously that you said that you write so much in your role. So how has that translated into your role? How do you make sure that you're writing more and better consistently?
Yeah. I try to, make things like clear to view and like make it easy and digestible. Like I'm not writing like 4 to 5 lines in a row. Like I'm getting a lot of white space and like using headings and some bullets. I'm not sure, really sure like the feedback on it, because I don't really get feedback from customers on it. But like, I just think for me, like when I look, I guess I'm thinking about myself, but I'm also thinking about like what people are experiencing, right? They're like flooded with emails. People do not want to read like long paragraphs of information. So I try to keep it to like the point and like what's most important and relevant And so, yeah, like obviously that's new to me and I'm playing around with that, but I've not gotten any like horrible messages about my communication yet. So I feel like I'm on the right track, but, yeah, it like goes along with LinkedIn writing, right? Mm-hmm. Like people do not want to see like five lines of text bunched together. Like it's overwhelming for the reader. We're punched with content all day long. Right. Like, and I don't know, for me, like for sure, I'll like see a bunch of text and I'm like, wow, that could be great content. But I'm like next, cause we're just like reading stuff all the time.
Yeah. It's kind of difficult. And one thing that I've been realizing more recently is that since Justin Welch has become really popular, like everybody's doing the exact same things that he is, which is good, but until everything looks the exact same and then you get to a point where it's like, oh, whenever I scroll through LinkedIn, I'm very aware of what captures my attention. And I was scrolling and I saw Justin Welch's post and it just didn't hit me the same way that it usually does, because I think that I'm becoming desensitized to the listicles and the one sentence hook of like, this was important for me because da da da, and then list. And I was like, dang it, because that's good content. I don't want to be desensitized to it, especially whenever it's good. But it's interesting to see how much like how easy it is to become desensitized to content, how much it's necessary to have pattern interrupts and have the things that capture people's attention, engage them. Like, how do you do that in a setting where you're trying to teach people things? Because like, it's hard to teach people things, and then it's harder to teach people things online. And then it's harder to teach people things online with like enablement stuff sometimes, because sometimes it's not super personable. How do you go about it?
Oh, I think that's really interesting about the pattern interrupts. And I agree. I think like you can be desensitized. Like I think I'm a little desensitized as well. But like, for example, let's think about trainings. And this is what I was thinking about with our team and like pattern interrupts, right? So like, I'm thinking every single person has been on a training before. They're like, oh, I don't want to do this. This is like taking, like, this is what I'm thinking. A lot of people have probably come, because I've had trainings too, like in teaching, where I'm like, this is taking out of my day and I'm freaking out about everything else that I have to do. Right. So mm-hmm. I'm like, not even focused on the training. And if this really isn't going to help me like get better at my job and take something off my plate, then I'm probably not going to implement it. Right. So mm-hmm. For me, it's like, first of all, that happens in the sales cycle, right? Like, are we really solving the problem that they need solved for? Like, if are we really the best solution? And if we are, then like, this will be great, right? But it also is like, how does the leader set them up for this training too? Like, if they're hyping it up, if they're not, like, that all plays into account too. But like, for me, I'm thinking in my role, I can't control that stuff as much. But like, I guess I can actually, because like when I'm meeting with the leader in advance, like they should be jacked about it, right? As we're leading up to the training. But anyway, that's why onboarding is so important. But what I'm thinking about the training as a specific example is, like I imagine like all these people are getting trained on so much tech, right? They have so much tech. They've been onboarded 17 million times and they're just like over it. So like how can you be different in a training? Like how can you stand out and be providing a different experience, right? So like pattern interrupt, start with music. Who does that? Nobody. So I've done that a few times. I mean, asking people like directly, like calling them out by their name, or like starting out and being like, hey, Johnny, like, where are you from? You know, like connecting with them in the beginning, like, you know, I don't know. I just imagine a lot of like training start out with like, this is the product. This is what we do. Here we go. Do, 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 you know? And it's like, if you can be different, I think that, that'll catch their attention. Like, I think if you, and especially starting to gather their attention, like right at the start is huge, because then you can maybe have them like for the whole time. So those are just some things that I've thought about, but I think that kind of touches on your pattern interrupt.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it does. I think it's very interesting that those are the things that you've thought about. I've thought about this too. Just what captures people's attention? How do you make something interesting for somebody? Like if you're a speaker or if you're doing something for their benefit, right? Like you're teaching them because it helps them, but it's almost like you have to go a little bit extra. You can't just say, I'm doing this for your good. It's like you have to, in some sense, either communicate that and get them to believe that, or just make it entertaining. Like I forget who outlines the different types of social posts, but I was doing some research on like the different types of social posts that are engaging. And it was, there are some social posts that inform, some that empower, some that
entertain,
empathize.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing I think you're touching on.
Yeah.
Like I think what really makes an amazing like demo or training or anything like that, you're telling the story around it, right? Like, so I'm really understanding what an AE goes through daily and the pain that they experience. And I can like talk to it to a point where they like, oh, I really feel understood. And you know, it's like a story and they're like so engaged along and they're ready to hear like the end solution and like what's going to help them. So I think that's really a really hard thing to do. But I think that takes it to the next level. If you can tell the story and speak to their like, cause like, for example, like in teaching, I had to write IEPs and they were like a ton of work. Like if someone could go on a call and train me and be like, I know how much work this takes to fill out these IEPs and it takes, and you've been sitting at every weekend, like just spending so much extra time filling this out and uploading your paperwork. What if we had a solution for you? Like, you know, stuff like that. Like I would get, that would grab my attention because I've had the pain of like working on weekends all day, filling in the admin work. It's like, can you tell the story of like what an AE can experience? Right. That's tough to do, especially if you hadn't had the experience in that role. So.
Yeah. So I have a question on that front, but I think that, yeah, you hit on an interesting thing. So like all of those things, anything that is psychologically appealing to people are just superhuman. Like that's the thing that I've been realizing most out of anything else. It's just, it's all very basic. It's all very human. Like the reason that the hero's journey works is because, you know, people want to be the hero. And then second, because like there's almost this like level of care that needs to happen for people to care back. Like you have to care first and then they care back. And so you understanding their pain, you understanding their story, like that's you showing that you care and then they care back. And it's just like this weird, deeply human thing that we reciprocate care. I think that's amazing though. Like it's so interesting to watch that something that like that never changes. That's just, it just is.
Yeah. I think the whole storytelling piece is really fascinating to me. And I like, that's one thing I really think is cool about video. It's like, you know, this goes back to like content, right? Like I love writing, but I also think video is very fascinating because there's something about seeing someone's face or there's something about seeing someone or hearing someone's voice. And I also think voice engages like tone of voice and things. But I think it's so fascinating because if you can tell a story in a compelling way, like you can grab anyone's attention, right? So like I learned about that in my job search, which I didn't really do intentionally, but I kind of just figured it out. But like a lot of people were asking me about like, what's your story? Like when I was networking with people and it was not necessarily not always CS people. Like it was Jake, for example, you know, they would ask me like, what's your story? Like, and I would tell my story and I would like, it was weird because I didn't think anyone cared about my story. Right. Like it was weird to hear that at first. And then like, I just got really good at telling it, but then I also got really good at telling the story about, like what skills I had in teaching and how it's going to translate to CS. Right. So like I had to paint the picture for the people in the business about like what I did as a special education teacher, cause they don't know. And then I had to show them the connection between how it's going to work here in this new role. So like you have to storytell there. Right. So it was just, it was really fascinating. Like that just kind of like, I would just learn how to do that. I don't know how, but then how it like comes together and works and like, and plays into so many other parts of the role I'm in now to like storytelling. It's interesting.
That is very interesting. So you said that you didn't know how. Could you give like tips, even though you don't know how you did it?
I don't know. I don't know. It's really interesting. I think you just like how you, I don't know a lot about storytelling, honestly. Like it kind of came to me like in, I've heard about it before, but like, I didn't know like what it actually meant. Or, you know, like you just hear the word and you're like, oh, okay. Like I didn't get how it applied in like these scenarios, you know? But honestly, I think it was just really deeply understanding the role and some of the like skills that I know would be beneficial. And then it was understanding like my role previously and how they connect and like telling the story around it. Like I eventually developed like a little chart that helped me. But I also think like telling my own story, I don't know. I was just like very passionate about it. I think that's like part of, you got to get people to believe it. And I don't know, like that kind of hit me too, because there were people on LinkedIn who are like, oh, you're like, you have like a really good storytelling. Like you have good storytelling skills. And I was like, well, I don't know. Yeah, I didn't know that. And then, yeah, just some other people too. And like, even like in my writing, they said that I can like tell the story well. So then I kind of reflected on it. I'm not really sure like why I may be good at that. I don't think I'm an expert by any means, but, I think a lot of like some of it can come with passion, you know, like whatever you're talking about, like you actually truly believe in. Like, I think that helps with storytelling for sure.
I agree. I think it's like a deep human thing. That's why if you can do it on demand, it's both an amazing skill and also slightly dangerous.
Well, I started doing the webinar and, you know, it was interesting because I previously was on video for like a highlight video, like way back when it was like, I was in eighth grade. I had to like speak on this highlight video for like the people who were on the team. I was an eighth grader, so I wasn't on varsity or anything yet, but I like was freaking out. Like I was literally like hyperventilating. And wow. Now I'm like speaking on webinars, like, and it doesn't really make me nervous. Like it did in the beginning, right? I wasn't familiar with the product as much, the language and all that stuff. But now it's just like, I just be myself. And they were like, yeah, you just like are really natural at this. And I'm like, who knew, you know, like I didn't use these skills before. I didn't do this stuff. And I mean, I spoke in front of kids and teaching, but I think it's probably more intimidating to speak to adults sometimes. So yeah, I don't know. I kind of realized I had somewhat of like a natural ability to be able to speak in on like a webinar, I guess. I don't know.
That's definitely a skill that I want to hone. I wonder if like the fact that you were working with kids, it's not as daunting, but kids have a short attention span. So it's very like you have to keep them engaged consistently. So I wonder if that also helped with it, just being able to tell something linearly. It's interesting. I was watching a video or reading something where they did some studies to figure out when kids got bored at a certain, Sesame Street, actually. They were trying to make Sesame Street like the most amazing show ever. And so they kept on doing studies to figure out when kids dropped off. And they were realizing how they needed to structure the television show to keep kids engaged enough to learn, which was interesting.
Wow, well, it's like, I'm not on TikTok, but like, this is the interesting part about video too, right? Like, and this is where I started really thinking about engagement when I started writing on LinkedIn too, but it's like, you watch a video. Why did you watch that full video? Like what was the start of the video? Clearly they said something that engaged you then. Like, how did they keep your attention that whole time? Or like, for example, like on TikTok, I think you can be like, oh, they dropped off at the 15 second mark. And it's like, all that's just so fascinating. And like, it's like more challenging to gather attention nowadays because there's just so much, like, you know, you got Instagram, you got TikTok, you got LinkedIn, you got all these things going on. It's like, it's really hard to grasp people's attention.
Yeah. It's definitely interesting to see how like a 10 second video can make me care about a person.
Right. That's so crazy. And probably gives them more credibility than they actually are worth.
Probably so. I think it's like I said, double-edged sword, good thing, but also slightly dangerous. Oh, well. One of the questions that I had for you was whenever it comes to like understanding your customer's problem, whenever it comes to telling that story and really storytelling, solving their problem, helping them, being their advocate, being their advisor. How do you understand the problems of another company enough to not only sympathize and problem solve, but also empathize, like really, really deeply understand it?
That's a good question. I don't know if you'll like always 100% like understand. I think it just goes back again to like good listening, to be honest, like good listening and yeah, just like continuously showing up and caring about like, and doing what you say you're going to do, you know? I don't know. I think that's something I'm still learning.
Mm-hmm. What has been helpful in your learning process?
I just think the more reps, like the more customers you speak with, like, I think that's really where the growth happens. And just like reflecting and getting that feedback as well. Obviously, like this is my first business experience. This is my first like set of customers and everything. So you think about someone who has like 10 years of working with customers in a business, like I'm very new, right? So, I mean, experience time frame doesn't always mean everything, right? But I do think like the more reps you get, the better you get.
Yeah, that's usually the answer that people don't want to hear is do the things that have always been said and do them consistently, but they work. That's why they've always been said.
Right.
Okay. So one of the things that I have an issue with, and I wonder if you also have an issue with this, is so you seem to be a systems thinker. Are you a systems thinker?
Yeah, I think so. I definitely am not like super rigid, but I do like process.
Okay. So I have this issue where like I see the big picture because that's what I love to see. And then I see the individual steps, but because I see both, I sometimes get caught up in not shiny objects, but like the next thing, like, oh, we could do this. We could do this. And I always have ideas. Do you ever do that? And if so, how do you rein that in enough to focus and get the work that you need to get done?
I don't know if I do that necessarily, but like, I do find myself sometimes getting stuck with like, especially in like a startup, like thinking all the things are already laid out and they may not be right. Because we're literally building the process out. So like, sometimes you have to be okay with like not knowing that the process is fully established. And so it's not like I'm like super stuck in the fact that we don't have a process. It's just like, I guess I'm like looking for it. And then I have to realize like, we're still building it. Like it's okay to just do something and like try something. So cause I've never been in this type of environment, right? Like usually, it's just different business. So, I think that's something where like, I'm still working through a little bit, but
that takes a lot of self-confidence and self-trust. How have you been building that to get to the point where you're like, okay, well, we don't have this done. I think this is reasonable. I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Like taking the action on noticing a gap in something and then just like going for it and realizing like, oh, I'll take the lead on this. Like we need to build this out. Honestly, I think that is something I can probably work on. Like, I think I'm at this point now where I've like had this experience. And now I can start figuring out like how this all pieces together. Like I've had enough customers go through and like did the full process that like with certain calls, I should say, that I can start like figuring out things that I think we could maybe change or things like that, you know? But I think it could definitely be better on like, oh, I recognize we have this gap in our, something and like, oh, I'll take the lead on this. Like, I think I have ideas, like I'll action it and let's see what you think.
I like that. So
it's definitely like, I think a next level type thing for me for sure.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard to see the next potential steps, like to see the gap, to know who to talk to, and then to not just say, oh, there's a problem, but, oh, hey, there's a problem. I took the initiative of building out the first five steps. Here they are. What do you think? Like that it takes a lot.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely good at identifying the gaps in things. I can be better at making sure I communicate the solutions that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to unlock yourself. You have to be like, okay, this is actually okay for me to do. It's okay for me to, you know, create solutions, have ideas, and communicate that. It doesn't mean that it's going to happen, but it's actually very, very helpful to the person who doesn't have to do the thinking.
I think the story in my head is, and this is probably just like something that I grew up with, is like, that's leadership job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's leadership roles do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you want to be in a leadership role, you got to start doing the leadership role without being a leader, right? It's like, I remember listening to a podcast. They were like, how do you get the promotion? Well, you start doing the task and the jobs of like what the promotion would be.
Mm.
And it's like, oh, that makes total sense, you know, but I think it's something to keep in mind for sure.
Yeah. That reminds me of something else that I heard on another podcast. It was like, you can't expect to be something that you aren't yet. Like, you want to be this next level. Well, then become the person that's capable of being that. Like, you can't just expect it to be given to you, or like that. It's always difficult because there's a level of proactivity that you need to have. And then you have to be able to almost strategically see, okay, what exactly do I have to be proactive in? What do these people care about? How do I do that as well? So it's kind of like taking, it all goes back to the very beginning. What do people value, and how do you show that? Yeah.
I was just going to say that. What is the leadership? Well, first it's like awareness on where your gaps are, where you need to improve to like be that next role you want to be, for example. And then like, what is the leadership going to recognize and care about in order for you to prove like that you're essentially can move to that next role?
Yeah. I think I could have improved in that a couple of times in the past. I think that like saying, what does somebody care about? What does somebody value? And breaking it down and understanding it from the, okay, what position are they in standpoint? That's important. But to go even further, I think what I need to do, and I learned this, was like actually understand the person that I'm trying to understand. Like not just, okay, what do they value because of their position, but what do they value as a person? And like, that's just question asking. So like whenever I get a chance, I should have been a little bit more intentional. And I learned that the hard way, just like more intentional about asking questions, about really understanding them and what they value, about understanding what they measure. Like, what are you measuring me on? What do you care about? What does success look like to you?
I think that's a really good thing. I'm going to write that down actually. Like just to straight up ask, like, what do you value? Like, what are you looking for? Like what stands out to you or something like that? You know, I think it's a good question. I'm going to ask that.
It is a good question. I was like, man, I should have done that before. I'm not making that mistake again.
Well, and this is like the thing that's new for me too, is like in education, you didn't get really paid on performance, right? So business, you can be intentional, right? Like you can be more intentional on like paving your path. Like, and I think you can make progress faster if you're very intentional about it. And like, you kind of are the driver of like where you're going. And so like, for me, it's kind of like a new mindset to have, because it was just kind of like everyone gets a raise and it's like step by step. And it's like, it wasn't by my performance. So this here is different. And I definitely like that better. Like I like the performance-based type things, but I just need to get like, make sure my mindset is wrapped around in that way. Like, right. Like I'm just programmed the other way. It's hard to flip. But yeah, I think that's a great question.
I've started
It just goes back to emotional intelligence too, of like understanding other people and what they care about.
It does. I've started to see SaaS. I started first in partnerships, like to see partnerships as a choose your own adventure like role. But now I see just all of SaaS as choose your own adventure. It's like, okay, you can start in customer success and go to sales. You can start like at any level, at any role, and go somewhere else. You can challenge yourself as much as you want and then grow as much as you want and go to different companies. And it's really, really interesting to see how first transferable the skills are, but also how you are pretty much your own limit. And so it's like, it's a balance of, okay, you have to challenge yourself to want more while also doing the job in front of you really, really, really well.
But you know what it comes down to?
What?
It comes down to like you're, so basically like I started like you start out, you're new, you're uncomfortable, you're learning. And then like, maybe you start getting in a groove, right? But like, mm-hmm. you just got to keep pushing yourself to the next level. It's literally just sitting in uncomfortable spots. Like that's how you grow, right? So mm-hmm. you're just constantly pushing the next level. You're constantly just finding the next thing that's going to make you uncomfortable. It's super easy to stay comfortable.
Was it hard for you to get to the point where you were performing really, really highly at Duly? Were you like putting in extra hours to perform at the same level, or was it relatively easy with the skill set that you already had?
I was surprised at how much transferred over, to be honest. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just always thought like business was this whole other thing, but it's been cool to like see how things connect. Mm-hmm. I think in the beginning it was very hard for me to like not know what I don't know. Like I knew I didn't know enough, but I didn't know what I needed to go know. Right. Like you don't know, you don't have the experience. So it was hard for me to be new because I wanted to nail calls. Like I wanted it to be amazing. I wanted it to be good. I wanted it to be amazing. It goes back to just like my perfectionism. Like I'm not very good at being bad at things, which is bad. Like I need to work on that. Yeah, I definitely need to work on that, but it's, I think that's why it took me such a long time to make the transition from teaching. Like, you know, I'd been thinking on it for a little bit, like in teaching, like just, I knew I didn't want to be there, but I didn't know where to go. So it's like, oh, I don't know. Like, but it's that just that action step you got to take. And it was super uncomfortable. Like, you know, I knew the right decision was to quit, but then I had to get on LinkedIn. I didn't know anything about LinkedIn and I didn't know about like different jobs. I had no idea what path I was taking, like, and super uncomfortable. Right. But then like, that's where all the growth happens and you just have to like push through it and learned a lot about myself and learned a lot that I can like figure things out on my own. Right. Like I found a way to get a job in a new industry without knowing anyone. And then I found out a way to know everyone, like connect with more people, and then got a job in like a non-traditional way. Like I didn't apply to the job. Like I got the job through connecting with people and like obviously got the interview. That's what I mean. And then earned the job through the interview. But yeah, it was just interesting. It really helped me think about like nobody knows things when they first start. They just push through and learn as they go. Mm-hmm. And like, I always had this programming that like, you need to know all the steps. You need to get taught all the curriculum before you start something. And it's like, that is so not the way. Like nobody knows all the details before they start a business. They have an idea. They act on it. They pivot, they move. Like, you know, it's just like anything, just something that really hit me when I switched jobs.
Yeah. So that made me think of two things. First, it was, I think that understanding the rules are important, but then understanding that you can break them is more important. So like understanding which rules you can break is super important. And like, I think that was one of the things that was difficult for me was whenever I went through school, whenever I was taught all of these things and how the world worked and how business worked, like it created these implicit rules, these implicit like guidelines. This is how it is. And I think that one of the most important things for me was recognizing, okay, actually this is not how it has to be. This is how it is in this specific setting. And then just almost separating what is and has to be from like what is and has been chosen to be by somebody else.
Totally. I think an awareness is super important here too, because like, I think me hopping on LinkedIn late, and I just applied to this scenario because it's like the one that I have and it was the most relevant one, but like I didn't know, like, I didn't have perceived notions about, like what LinkedIn was. Like, I know a lot of people, like, it's a job seeking platform. I need to be professional. I need to do all these things. I didn't know. Like, I just started being on LinkedIn. And then, you know, I knew the traditional way was to apply for jobs, right? But like, I also was smart enough to realize like I wasn't getting traction by doing that. And I didn't have business experience that was like screaming out at them from my resume. So I was like, I got to do something else. So I think that's where people get stuck too, is like, they just keep doing the same thing over and like, they're not getting any results. And like,
why isn't it working?
Right. And so like, I saw a few posts on that. Like when I was in the job search, it's like, Johnny applied to 500 jobs and is just chilling and waiting for the responses. And I was like, I'm not going to be that person. Like I'm going to switch. So, and do something different.
So what exactly did you do? Like how would, because I think it's actually one of the biggest and best things that anybody could ever do is to just like throw themselves out in the wild and then realize that they'll be okay. Like learning that self-trust, learning that you'll probably figure it out and having the determination to figure it out. How did you figure it out? Like, what were you doing to differentiate yourself? What were you doing to not be Johnny?
Yeah, I don't know. It's so crazy to think about too. Like, yeah, it was hard at first. Like when I first went on like an office hour session, it's like, I was like, I got to get in front of people and I got to start connecting with people and like understanding things. And like the guy was like, we're going to go in small groups and we're going to talk about this business thing. And I'm like, I don't know what he's talking about. I'm just going to like shut the computer. Like I cannot do this. Like it was very much like, oh my gosh, I'm freaking out. But I stayed on and then I met this girl and like it literally rippled effect for networking for me. Just gained confidence about the role and like what I was doing. And then there was this one point where I was like, you know, sending out a bunch of resumes and I was getting like zero feedback. And I was like, well, there's gotta be something wrong here. Like my resume is not good. Or like, and then I was just like obsessing over the resume and like tweaking things. And I'm like, I don't know how much better this can get. So I was like, okay, whatever. I'm just going to like jump on a lot of calls, get connected with people and like have my resume ready. But like, I wasn't applying as much because like, I just felt like it wasn't doing good for me. So I knew I needed to get in front of people so that they could hear like being able to story tell my skills and then also hear my personality and like get to know me. And like, I'm a hard worker. Like I want to learn, I want to improve. Like I hit this point where I was like, I just need experience. Like, give me a chance. Right. But I needed to convey that like in person versus like on a Zoom call, because they weren't going to see that on my resume. And so I got really active on LinkedIn and it started helping me build connections and get in front of people.
So like, whenever you say active on LinkedIn and joining calls, were you just like looking for different groups that were meeting and building out your content game, or what did that mean for you?
So I was definitely like posting twice a day and I was just like posting about my journey and like learnings and all that stuff. And then like sometimes I had some strategies around it too. It's so interesting. Like when I have these conversations with people, like it reminds me of like, oh wow, I actually had like some thought behind this stuff, right? Like I should have like literally journaled the whole thing.
That's amazing.
Like, yeah, that would be a good book, right? Like I should write
that.
Just like when I went to a specific CS webinar, then I would like go connect with that person. But then I would be like, hey, I loved what you said on this webinar, like blah, blah, blah. Like, so bringing value, right? Like I'm not just randomly reaching out and asking something or like just saying, I want to connect. Like I went to the webinar, took the time to watch them. I referenced back and like said something they specifically said. And then, I also posted about it and showed the things that I learned and then like mentioned them in the
post. That's good. That's really, it's good because it's good content. Like you're learning out loud, you're providing value for people that are potentially scrolling past your posts. You're shouting somebody out and that's always a good thing. Like people like to be shouted out and you're just creating all of these. It's almost like, building a blog and creating a lot of backlinks. Like you're backlinking to tons of people.
Yeah. So then like this person specifically was pretty well known in the space and then they have lots of connections. So then they connect me with other people. Right.
That's awesome.
And then you have to be, you have to literally like sell yourself on the conversations, right? Like you gotta be, you gotta be energized. You gotta be, you gotta know what you want. You gotta be, like prepared for those meetings, ask specific questions, like be relevant to them. Like they're taking their time. You don't want to waste it. And then all goes back to like the value stuff again, right? Like I was doing this stuff like almost unintentionally, realizing that it was like pretty high level. Right. And then, what else was I doing? Like, that's one way that I was like kind of being strategic. And then I like specifically would target CS people, right? Because I wanted to go in CS, but I also was like targeting people like outside of CS as well. And so, yeah, it just eventually like started creating this ripple effect, but I was also like writing some blogs and hopping on podcasts and things too. So that helped me stand out. And then like, you know, I'm a pretty good writer, so that helped like with LinkedIn too. And like in terms of content standing out. So
what is your follower count out right now? I don't think that's not a weird thing to ask, right?
Yeah. So here's the thing about that. I don't necessarily love that. Like, cause people can have a bunch of followers, but like be
provided. I agree.
Out, right. And I also think people can have a low account and be, they probably can make money. Like they're probably monetizing. Right. But yeah, no, but I do think people want to follow people who, if they're not just following blindly, like they all, they want to follow someone who's saying things that like they want to hear and like, and they get consistent engagement, like show something. I have 16,000 followers now.
That's good. I think, yeah, that, so that's why I asked, because like sometimes it's a weird question depending on why you care. And I care because I think it says that you're doing something right. Like you're writing content that's relevant, or you're writing something that people care about, or you're communicating care. Like something about what you're doing is obviously right, because first off, you have a lot of followers, and second, they haven't dropped off. Like most people, if you can catch people's attention for a little while, like I can scroll through my socials and there are very, very few people. I have periods where I'm like, follow, follow, follow. And then I have periods where I'm just like, oh, unfollow. I don't want to follow these people anymore. The people that have kept my attention and kept my care and kept my follow for the longest, those are the people that are doing something right. So like, I want to learn from them.
Yeah, I think it comes down to two, like if you connected with people and made connections, like people want to follow you because they made a connection with you, right? Like they like who you are. They want to hear your story. They want to follow along. But I also think writing obviously comes into play. Like if your writing's easy to read and engaging and relevant, but I also think like it comes down to like the niche stuff eventually that like Justin talks about. Right. And I don't know if I'm there yet. Right. But like, and I don't know if you always need to be there, but it's interesting. Like it made me think of it because of the Instagram. Like, for example, like I follow a chick because she makes cakes and I like watching her make the cake videos. Right. That's very specific. Like, so that's why it's important to be known for something like that. Right. Like, cause people will be like, oh, I really want to learn about content creation. Okay. I'm going to go follow Julie. Like, and that's not what I'm saying people say about me, but I'm just like, people know why they follow Justin Welsh, you know, people know why they follow certain people. That's why it's important, I think, at some point to like really hone in on something, because then you're the person people mention to, like, hey, go follow this person because they do a really good job of talking about this, and can't be good at talking about a bunch of different topics all the time. Right. So that's why it's important to narrow it down eventually.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. So final question before we get into rapid fire, do you have any specific, they're not that bad. They should be pretty easy. I think I've asked a couple of them actually throughout, but I'll come up with some new ones to give you the full rapid fire experience. So my last question to you is, you mentioned not knowing something and like you didn't know what you didn't know, and that was really frustrating in the beginning. What are some of the things for people who don't know what they don't know that they need to know? Like, what are the things you wish somebody would have been like, okay, here's a list of some things to go look into?
You mean for like customer success? Yeah. Well, first of all, I'll shout out Erica, I don't know if I don't want to say her name wrong, Virel. I don't know how to say it right. I apologize, Erica. She has this onboarding guide that's free that like literally, like I think I got, she came out with it when I was like kind of through my onboarding, but it's like 30, 60, 90. It's like so good. Like so good. It's like go shadow sales calls, learn the product, understand the sales cycle, just connect with a bunch of people. Like it's really good. And it's like how you can talk to your managers and things too. And it's just, it's really good. So like, honestly, that's something that people can follow. But what I would have done better, I think I would have like dove into the product even more before I like had to take a customer call. I think I would have shadowed a ton of more calls too. I think I would have got on sales calls too. Like sales, the people, the salespeople in our companies like calls as well. Just to like hear about their pain points. Like, what are they saying? Like, what do, like, just to understand the AE personas, right? Like understand what an AE does. Like, I didn't know all that stuff. Right. Mm. And then also like I knew surface level, but not like deep. And then, because that's our target persona, right? Like we're working with those types of people. So I really got to understand what they care about and what they do on a day-to-day basis. And then, yeah, just like networking throughout the company too, and really understanding like how everything works in your business.
That was great. I'll definitely link the onboarding guide below. And that's actually a great idea for anybody who's like actually good at something. If you are, you know, good at sales or good at partnerships or good at marketing, like an onboarding guide is so helpful. Just like, what do you do whenever you're finally getting in there? It's a great idea.
Yeah, I can share that with you. Like okay. I have it, I believe.
Okay, perfect.
Link to it.
So, yeah, I'll definitely link it below then.
You created an awesome thing for sure.
That's, you're like, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you ready for these rapid fire questions?
Yes. I love the fire. You know this from my LinkedIn.
Yes, I do. What was your, like, why did you decide to put that on your LinkedIn?
That's funny. Actually, someone asked me about that, right? Like, and definitely when I started getting on there, they were like, the fire, right? They wanted to know why.
Yeah.
So I chose it because I don't know, I feel like I'm a pretty passionate person and like to bring lots of energy. When I'm commenting on people's posts too, like I'm commenting when I like actually really like believe it or like it fired me up or something like that, right? And like, I just love typing in caps too. So it's just like energy, passion, like, yeah, that's kind of the gist of it, I guess.
That's awesome.
It's like the best emoji ever.
I use it very often, actually. I'm like, I think you can overuse emojis, so I have to scale back a little bit, but it's a really good emoji. It's not too much, but it's like just enough where people know what you mean and it has power, but it's like not overly powerful. So I would agree.
Yeah. That's the other thing I did too. I used a lot of emojis, but I used them strategically. So I think that helped me stand out a little bit too.
Yeah.
But I think there's this like LinkedIn, like don't use emojis too much or something. And so I definitely didn't know that was a thing, but like, I use emojis when I want.
Those are the rules that you can break.
As I get older, I like to break rules. So
that's hilarious. My wallpaper on my phone is I read the rules before I break them. And it's just like a collage of all the things that I love. And it's like, I think that that's kind of the way that I look at life now. It's okay. There are things that have been done a certain way for a long time because they need to be done that way. And there are other things that have been done a certain way because somebody liked it done that way. And those are the things that if you actually understand why, I think that's why I really respect the fact that you love understanding the macro view of the business, of everything else, is that like once you understand the macro view and then you get into the nitty gritty, then you start really seeing the gaps and the ways that things could work differently, the reasons why they work a certain way. And that's where like everything lies. I'm definitely a systems thinker.
It's so interesting though. You just mentioned the macro view again. What was the macro view in job search? Everyone's applying with just their resume and just like hoping to get a call back. So then I was like, well, I'm going to do something different. Mm-hmm. So like figure out what everyone else is doing and do the opposite in a good way, you'll make moves.
Yeah. Yeah. It's understanding the way that it's done. And then it's also understanding why. So like asking the question of, okay, well, like, why do we send in resumes? It's because people want to understand your value. And then it's like, okay, well, how else can I show that? And that's what you did so well. And I, 100%, I agree with that.
Yeah. Right. So what is everyone doing? Why are they doing it that way? How can I do it in a different way? I like that. I like those three questions you just like asked.
They're good. That's cool. Thank you for pulling them out. I'm like, I'm going to listen back and be like, okay, how do I implement this?
No, seriously. That's like a post right there.
Love yeah. That. Yeah. Definitely helpful. All right. You ready?
Yes. Let's do it.
Okay. I already asked you this question kind of, but if you have a different answer, say that. And if you don't, then I'll ask you a different question. Okay. Okay. All right. What do you wish that you knew whenever you started in SaaS?
I wish I would have knew more about like what I could have done to be successful. Like kind of like what we were talking about with the onboarding, like what I could have done right from the start to make myself and set myself up for more success. So like really dive into the product, really dive into even more than I was, really dive into the sales and all that. I just, you know, you, when you don't know what you don't know, you literally don't know what to do. So.
I love that. Who do you wish that you talked to earlier within your company?
I wish I would have talked like more to the sales team. Like the, I did talk to some of the sales reps, but I didn't get a lot to the leadership. It's just, I think that would have helped me understand more about like the persona faster, like what sales leaders care about and like what they do and like how it works at Duolee.
Yeah. I like that a lot. So like getting out of your role faster, going to the other roles, understanding how they work, why they work, what they care about, how to do your job better.
Not even sales, like anything, like marketing, all of that. Just like get out there. I can even do that better now. It's definitely hard. Like you get bogged down and like, you just like, I want to finish this work. But
there's really always, more work.
Right. I have a hard time with that too. It's very important to be intentional about like networking with people, because that's like one of the biggest things I realized from transitioning into like a job where you're passing by people and you're in person. You aren't doing that here. So you have to be intentional about going and meeting with people and connecting.
And that's the thing that really matters most. Totally. People.
And not even like to build relationships personally, but to like understand what they do.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Next question. What was the biggest mindset/belief challenge that you had to face and overcome?
In general or in like business?
Either. Like the things that have helped you to be successful now, the belief challenges that I think everybody struggles with, some sort of belief challenge. Like that's one of the cruxes of life and of daily life and business and being successful.
I'm going to talk about it in terms of like my job search. I think it really was like hard for me to make the transition, because originally like my belief was that like I needed to have a degree in business. I needed to know so much, like none of my skills are going to transfer. I think you can start a lot of things without knowing all of the details. Like you'll never know them. And you just have to move forward and continuously like keep going. And so like, that's like a belief that I'm continuously like working on, because I don't know. I just think it's kind of ingrained in me, like with my childhood and just like upbringing and things. I think believing everyone needs to teach me before I can actually do, or I can just do and then teach myself. So yeah, that's what I need to do. Cause like, that's literally what I did here and it worked. Right. Like, and I like grew a lot. And so I just need to apply that to other things in life as well.
Yeah, that's really big. Very, very big. Taking that one to heart.
Same. Like I want to learn the guitar, but like I have not started because I know that I know nothing about it. And it's like extremely hard. It's hard to struggle too. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Yeah. It's just, that's literally life. But I think there's just always those barriers. Like you just got to get past. So
I think the thing that has helped me, because I struggled with this too, just like asking what the next step was or like making a next step and then getting past that and being like, okay, well, what now? I've been doing this thing or I learned of this concept. It's called ultra learning. And basically you just learn as much as you can about a specific topic. Like you'll research everything. You're going to try and get into the heads of the people that are masters at this. So like kind of like business, but kind of like getting into your ICP. And then you almost create like understand and create their process backwards. And then you kind of create a system for, okay, well, by the time I get to this point, this would technically be my next step. And then you have this all mapped out. So eventually whenever you get to the next step, you're like, okay, I know what to do enough to just do it, which is the hardest part.
Yeah, for sure. That's cool. That's really interesting.
Last question. What is your favorite aspect of the SaaS industry?
Good question. I don't know. I think it's really interesting to figure out, like, I don't know. I like the analyzing piece of it, of like, and just like understanding like someone's problem and figuring out the solution for it. And is your product the solution? Mm-hmm. And let's say they don't really use well, like, well then discovering why they might not have, what it might have gone wrong along the journey. Right. Like, I think it's interesting to analyze those things. I also think more specifically, I think discovery is really interesting, like to ask the right questions and dive deep and like do that in a way that doesn't sound like interrogating is like a skill in itself. And it's really, it's really interesting. Like, I like that. I don't know. I'm curious though. I'm a curious person and I like questions. So, I think it's interesting how someone can craft questions and get people to speak and like reveal things
without being too leading or like moving them in a specific direction. Yeah. Very, very interesting.
But like allowing it to be natural, you know?
It's hard. And then to know that like you have a job to do and there are specific things that you need to do and to hit and to ends to get to. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I think to have a conversation where, you know, you have to get X, Y, Z done and like all these things that you need to tackle on the call, but then without you mechanically thinking about how you're going to get all those things tackled and have it be a flow natural conversation can be hard sometimes. Like I find myself like, you know, I got to check all these boxes and I have to get all these things done, but it's also like, it's really important to like keep the conversation natural and flowing. Mm-hmm. I think that's an interesting balance.
Like finding the threads to create good transitions.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. Okay. Well, last question. It has to do with resources. You take in a lot of content. You create a lot of content. What are some great resources for people who are looking to learn about customer success specifically, but also the SaaS industry?
I'm going to specifically say about customer success. I took the Success Hacker course, CSM level one. That was really helpful for sure. And then there's like a levels beyond that. I thought that was really helpful. They have a webinar as well. That's really helpful. What's the Client Success has a lot of like, boot camps that they run that are really nice. And a lot of great information from Christy, F, and then, just like subscribe to all these different like webinars and things. What are some other ones? Oh, CS Insider is like, has a newsletter and like they provide a lot of resources and like is a hub for CS info, and they have like CS mixers where they like have people network and stuff. So those are really cool. Erica, which I just said before, she's has a lot of CS content. Rachel, I don't want to botch these people's names, Pravin or something like that. She does a lot of CS content. So, and then J. Nathan is a guy from, where does he work again? I literally am blanking.
I'll find it.
Grow and Retain podcast, and Higher Logic is where he works, but he is great on LinkedIn. He's posting all this stuff about customer success all the time too.
That's awesome. And yeah, definitely. Like, I didn't realize how much good content was on LinkedIn until I started embedding myself into LinkedIn. Like, there's a lot that's happening.
For sure. There's a lot of other good people too I missed. So, yeah, just connect with people and you'll figure out, like, it'll start, you know, coming together, like who is who, and like you start following and finding the people that you need to in customer success if you're going that way.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I loved the conversation, talking about all the things that I'm passionate about, writing, asking questions, you know, SaaS.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I love it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. It was, I was really, really glad to get connected to you. Thank you again. It was like, I think hearing your story from teacher to SaaS is always interesting. Like, it's an entirely new perspective. So I hope that people enjoy it.
Let's hope. 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 Hope.